From the land to Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 29th day of May 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural energies and the conditions on the ground in Kansas with K-State University's Dan O'Brien. He's an agricultural economist. Along the way, I'll check the ag news for the day. We'll hear from weed scientist Aaron Hager. I spoke with him this morning right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois in his Turner Hall office. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. That with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities is out of the office this afternoon. However, John Hester is there, and he joins us. Hey, thanks for filling in, John. We appreciate that.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
Well, kind of an interesting day as we started after the three-day weekend. We started trade last night. The beans were higher. Corn was moving nicely. Then in the middle of the day, things just kind of dropped like a rock. What happened?
Well, like you say, I think we started off on the night. Everything was positive on relatively good news. We know it's dry in Brazil, Russia, and Ukraine. Which are positive. The export numbers came out, and they were on the high end in the corn, and they exceeded the high end in the beans, which is positive. And the wheat, strong dollar, and weak export demand, that's negative to wheat prices. But, you know, then about noon, Trump came out, reiterated that he was going to on China, the $50 billion of Chinese goods, that he was going to put a 25% tariff on. And about the time he came out with that, the bottom dropped out of things. And, you know, I think the sentiment in the pits was probably taking risk off after he announced that, because there's so much uncertainty in what's going to happen if that does take place. And then, you know, I'm a little suspicious that they didn't have the change the weather for the central corn belt. Maybe I think they may have had the storm moving a little further west than they on the swirl coming up from the south. So, you know, if the weather was a factor in it, and his export or his 25% tariffs, that about put the choke on the grain market this afternoon, plus...
Well, the Dow didn't react very well to that either. It's still down. It's down 450 points or thereabouts at this point, although I've got a lag of about 10 or 20 minutes on that one, so it may have changed. When you look forward, this is a bit of a whipsaw, though we've gotten, I suppose, used to it at this time. So the fundamentals, however, really haven't changed, other than it remains dry. And maybe if you're looking for those positive things, it remains dry in parts of Missouri, positive for price, this is, parts of Missouri, even parts of western Illinois, southern Iowa. So there's something to watch there still, isn't there, John?
Oh, yes. I think the weather's still probably the key factor in where the commodity prices are going to end up when the summer's over. You know, if we'd happen to miss this rain that they're guaranteeing we're going to get coming up in the next couple days, that, you know, by next week we'll be hurting in my area.
I saw corn earlier today, in fact, that didn't look all that good. It's up and it's growing nicely, but I suppose, but it looked like it was a little heat stress today. I had 3 days of 90 plus. Really does a number on the crops. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and you have a great day over there.
Okay, thanks so much, John. That, of course, is John Hester. He is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. In today's agricultural news, the White House doubled down today on a March 22nd memorandum announcing the United States would take multiple steps to protect domestic technology and intellectual property from certain discriminatory and burdensome trade practices by China. In accordance with the March 22nd memorandum, the White House today says it will continue to look toward investment restrictions and enhanced export controls that could be announced by June 30th of this year and that will be implemented shortly thereafter. The United States, it says, will continue to pursue litigation at the WTO, or World Trade Organization, for violations of the Agreement on Trade-Related Aspects of Intellectual Property Rights based on China's discriminatory practices. And under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, the United States will impose a 25% tariff on some $50 billion of goods imported from China. In the meantime, the White House says discussions with China will continue on these topics and that the United States looks forward to resolving longstanding structural issues and expanding exports by eliminating China's severe import restrictions. And so it seems tariffs against China that were thought to be on hold are back on again. From trade, the international scene, and the president, let's move on to the farm bill and what's been happening on the Hill. Critics and supporters alike have been ramping up their efforts ahead of the next vote on the farm bill, but it is those who oppose the current House version who see more time on the clock as an advantage. The House now has until June 22nd to reconsider H.R. 2 in its present form, but even that date for a vote remains up in the air amid Republican Party infighting over the immigration issue. The sprawling coalition that has opposed the House measure, which includes conservatives, writes Politico, taxpayer advocates, environmentalists, sustainable agriculture backers, and anti-hunger advocates, is working with a renewed focus to pick up more no votes over the next couple of weeks. They're targeting moderate Republicans as well as Freedom Caucus stalwarts. The extra time, of course, also presents House Ag Chairman Mike Conaway another chance to work on Republican members who voted no last time. The Texas Republican has said in recent days that he is confident the bill now has the 218 votes needed to pass. From the House, we'll move to the Senate, and not the farm bill, but immigration. A group of senators in both parties there are beginning to restart back-channel talks across the aisle and with the White House to be ready to act if needed. Senator Cory Gardner, the leader of the Senate's GOP campaign arm, urged President Donald Trump earlier in May to act quickly on an immigration overhaul after months of radio silence from the White House and Senate on the issue. In recent weeks, the House has been raising the issue on immigration, and it's preparing to take up one of several Republican bills in June. That same immigration showdown helped doom the farm bill vote recently. It also had moderate GOP lawmakers working with Democrats to back a discharge petition that would force a vote on immigration bills, one of which is Representative Bob Goodlatte's conservative bill that would in part overhaul the H-2A agricultural guest worker program. The House and Senate are on Memorial Day recess this week, so there won't be any vote in either chamber. And that's a quick look at the day's agricultural news. Well, this morning I dropped by Aaron Hager's office in Turner Hall on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. He's an extension weed scientist. Took up a couple of topics with him. The first was the height of corn and some of the restrictions on the labels for herbicide applications. It's important to pay attention, he says, not only to the height of the corn, but in particular to the growth stage of the corn crop.
A lot of the corn crop now across the state is going to be rapidly approaching its maximum growth stage for post-application herbicides. And each of our respective post-herbicides that we do use in corn have different label statements with respect to either a maximum height or maximum growth stage beyond which broadcast applications should stop. And there really you have to look at each product's respective label to know exactly what that is. But in general, a lot of products, once we reach that V6 to V8 timing, that's going to be about the maximum timing for their broadcast applications. Anything that includes acetochlor, that cutoff is actually 11-inch corn. Anything that contains atrazine, that's going to be a 12-inch corn cutoff height. So again, we certainly recommend people know what these restricted application stages are, again, whether it's either based on height or development stage. And a lot of times you'll see both a height or development stage listed on the label, and we certainly encourage people to go with the development stage instead of the corn height.
Given that, corn height is usually measured as the top of the uppermost leaf's arc. Now, I also asked this morning about weed height, because there'll be restrictions there too, says Aaron Hager.
Generally speaking, the smaller the weeds, the better for the post applications in terms of the efficacy. And certainly the longer that weeds are allowed to coexist and compete with the corn crop, the greater the likelihood at the end of the year that they could actually reduce the yield potential. Weeds will compete with both crops or with any other crop, but typically we associate the weeds in corn crop actually reducing the yield earlier in the development stage than what it would in soybean.
I also asked Aaron about the dicamba training many took over the winter months and what he thought it was most important for farmers and others to recall as they go to the field to use that product.
Well, certainly a lot of things to keep in mind with respect to changes on the labels of the approved dicamba formulations for the 2018 growing season. There's a big onus on all applicators for extensive record keeping. There's a list of about 20 different items that must be recorded for every application of dicamba. And it really doesn't matter if it's in soybean or corn or any other crop that these dicamba products are approved for use in. It has to be done. And we certainly have to follow the guidelines in terms of the environmental conditions under which we can make applications and be aware of the conditions where applications are simply not allowed on the label. The other thing that we're going to probably make more mention of here in about another week in the soybean crop is that if farmers or applicators are adding certain residual herbicides in with their post-applied product, whether it be glyphosate or dicamba, there are some restrictions on these products as well with respect to how late they can be applied. For example, a product called Zidua can be applied through the third trifoliate stage of soybeans. Others may go to about the fifth trifoliate stage, and then there's others that simply say a certain number of days between application and harvest. So just again to make people aware, as we approach some of these growth stages in soybean, there are some cutoff limits on some of these residual products that are foliar applied in soybean also.
I had one final question for Aaron this morning as I sat there in his Turner Hall office. That was about what was in the pipeline as related to herbicides for either corn or soybeans. For the better part of a decade, there's been really nothing new. And he says, that's still the case.
Now, the pipeline is still pretty dry. We really don't see anything novel in terms of new target sites or sites of action products under development. And again, we anticipate that this is probably going to continue on at least into the foreseeable future. So again, stewarding what we have right now in the marketplace that remains effective is in everyone's best interest.
You can see more from Aaron Hager, weed scientist at the University of Illinois and with Extension, on the website, The Bulletin. It's at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. The IPM stands for Integrated Pest Management, or you can follow him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at UIWeedSci. That's at UI for University of Illinois, weed, and then sci, all one word, sci is short for science. Again, that's Aaron Hager, Extension Weed Scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I spoke with him earlier today. Well, let's check in now on the Agricultural Energies. Dan O'Brien is here from K-State. Thanks for being with us today, Dan. Can you start by telling us about the conditions there in Kansas as it relates to crops first?
A tale, really, of different parts of the state. You know, we're still dry in parts of southwest Kansas, or at least had been dry. As we speak, we've had some strong rains, in some cases torrential, having hit some of these areas. So wheat that had been damaged earlier probably not going to be able to recover a lot, even in the time we have left. But anything that had been planted that wasn't just flat washed out ought to benefit from the moisture that's come in a lot of areas of the state. Again, corn, grain, sorghum, soybeans, sunflowers, crops like that, cotton to the south.
I know you've been watching what's been happening with both the ethanol and biodiesel situations. What's your takeaway this week?
Well, again, the ratio of RBOB gasoline prices to ethanol is at about 0.69. If you look at what it is on today's futures closes, again, about $1.48 for ethanol, RBOB about $2.14. And again, 0.69, 0.7 ratio is the lowest it's been in over a year. Of course, the markets today as we speak, Todd, are hopping around, pretty negative, I think, in response to some trade issues, et cetera. As the stock market was down, affected the energy complex and no doubt affected a lot of things. Really, the issue will be how all that finally works out, and then what people deem the impact will be on energy demand after all of that. So that'll affect ethanol plant profitability, biodiesel, whole number of things. So we're waiting to see, I guess.
Why is it that we watch the ratio, or meaning what does it tell us?
Well, I think the renewable fuel standard driving us to use, 10% blends for oxygenated fuels in any gasoline that's sold here in the U.S., at least that on average. So we have a drive to make sure we mix 10% in. So we're producing using a lot of corn to produce ethanol. Stockpiles been building up. But so we have that happening on the ethanol side, but gasoline prices steadily marching higher, at least they had been until today. So here you have a strong gasoline demand, the necessitated mandate to mix ethanol with it, and because of that, we're building up some stocks of ethanol. So you have an upward trend for RBOB gasoline and a sideways to lower trend. Has been sideways to lower for ethanol.
Anything else that we ought to be keeping an eye on that you see in particular?
I really wonder about where the final numbers out of South America will go and how ethanol profitability and biodiesel profitability, how they'd be affected if we have any type of a crop problem here in this summer. Right now, we just had rains, so we don't want to bang the scabbard too much on that, but the point being that we have some factors that are supporting corn prices, and ethanol plants would be losing money right now if we didn't have strong DDG demand. That's just the reality of it.
As always, it's good to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That, of course, is Dan O'Brien. He's with Kansas State University. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thanks, Don, for being with us. We've been watching the rainfall amounts that have come from Alberta. There are some places that have just been deluged. This is the tropical storm. It came on land. And it's making a beeline for, it looks like, the eastern part of the Corn Belt. Can you give me an idea of what its track might look like and the rainfall expectations from the Delta moving northward?
Well, certainly the way the track is, as you highlighted there, headed towards the eastern Corn Belt, portions of the Ohio Valley. There is going to be a system, though, coming in from the west that will straighten out the track and turn it more east here in the coming days. With that said, though, there will be many areas that could see 3 to 6 inches of rain, some isolated areas up to 7 to 8 inches of rain along this path. Still a lot of moisture with this system, heavy thunderstorms. In these situations, you do have some isolated pockets to where you get these extreme amounts. But it is certainly going to be wet in those eastern areas. But the way the pattern's evolving, it's not going to be able to make much more of a push to the northwest. Going to be deflected more in the east in the coming day.
Where would you put the division line? Because I know there are parts of Illinois from Springfield Center of the state to the west that really are beginning to think, hey, we're pretty dry at this time.
Yeah, I don't think those areas are going to be able to benefit much out of this. There's going to be some, but probably not to maybe alleviate some of those drier concerns. And you're right, there is a pocket of dryness that has evolved over the last few weeks, and that area stretching southwestward across portions of Missouri and the eastern Oklahoma down into eastern Texas. And that's an area that our modeling is showing probably a tendency towards dry conditions likely going on for a little bit longer.
Anything in the northern part of the Corn Belt, the northern plains, Minnesota, North Dakota, or parts of northwestern Iowa that we should be aware of?
Well, it does look like those areas will continue to be on the mild side in temperatures. After a very cold April, temperatures have turned around nicely here in the month of May. While I don't expect those areas to get really warm, I do expect them to be at least average or a little bit above. The areas that are most likely to get more rain will be along the Interstate 80 and I-90 corridor area.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Hey, do visit the website at willag.org and look at the calendar of events. Couple of things. If you have something you'd like us to come out and participate in, we'd be glad to do that and to put together a marketing panel for you as well. You can contact me at tgleason@illinois.edu or at 217-333-9697. On the calendar of events, you'll see what I'm calling the Grain Elevator Tour. We'll start next week and then go into full gear the following week. We'll be in Sonoman and Springfield, Fairview, Macomb, Beardstown, Ashland, and Coal City, along with Hartsburg and a few others yet to be announced. You can see all the details at willag.org right now. You have a great afternoon and be safe. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.